We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal. The Solid
Verbal. Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrand. Joining me, as always, he's back in New York City, my man Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
Well, first of all, my voice is back to about 96.2%.
Yes, I can hear it. It sounds delightful.
Second of all, I'm a little bit wistful. I'm a little bit sad that our little fireside college football chats on Sunday mornings, they're not done, but they're coming to a close.
They are.
And
they are.
That's a bummer because, you know, there's something nice about getting up early, going through everything, watching what you missed the day before, reading up, trying to put things into context, coming up with, let's call it, strained puns whenever I can, getting dirty looks from Jody with an I because she has to do solo parent duty Sunday morning as I do all of those things and the solid baby tries to eat. This morning, it was one of those giant like furniture screws.
Okay, yeah.
Fell off a ledge and that was fun. So otherwise, Ty, I'm going to miss these.
Are you
laying out the emotions right here.
Just for clarity.
Yeah.
Are we announcing that you're taking the job at Mizzou, or are we just going to be stopping this because of the natural flow of the season?
Oh, Ty, there's not enough money. There's not enough money. I'm just generally sad that rivalry week is over. We have all sorts of crazy results to discuss and listen to the reverbs of all of our extra enthusiastic listeners.
They were good this week, yeah.
And, you know, things are going to change in the new year after the national championship and we get into the offseason. These are the days I treasure.
All right. Well, welcome back, one and all. Thank you for joining us here on the Solid Verbal. Thank you for subscribing. Don't forget, if you haven't already, you can wherever you get your podcasts. Please do subscribe to the show. We will be with you all calendar year, regardless of what our schedule ends up being. We will talk more about that at some point in the near future. But
yeah.
In the interim, we got a bunch of games to discuss here. As Dan said, we're going to play through your rivalry week reverbs, which were always and have
you
always been.
You nailed that, by the way.
Thank you.
Rivalry week reverbs.
I had to close my eyes and concentrate, but I got it. Rivalry week reverbs. Very
That's
passionate.
Like the quadruple gainer off the top platform.
Quadruple axle, baby. You know it. Thank you, as always, for downloading the show. Don't forget to follow us out there on social. And check out the subreddit, started by our good friend Peter. It's at solidverbal.reddit.com, Dan. So what were your general takeaways here? What was your watch situation? Because you were traversing the good old US of A, and there were games on Thursday, games on Friday, games on Saturday. General takeaways, thoughts here. It was a fun weekend of college football. If I interject mine here very quickly, just a fun weekend. genuinely, like, all the reasons that we started doing this podcast, all the weird trophies and the passion, all that stuff.
The wintry mixes.
That's why we got into this in the first place back in 2008. And just to listen to the reverbs and see what people have to write in response to these matchups, it's why people tune in as well. So this was the culmination of everything that I think we hold dear in college football.
I didn't watch any of Rivalry Week. Is that what the answer? No, I'm just kidding. I did not watch the Egg Bowl live because it was right in the middle of West Coast Thanksgiving, caught up after the fact. Friday was difficult to watch because I was flying across the country, but I did watch a good chunk of Texas Tech because it was the one game available to me on the American Airlines app that streams live TV channels. That was real fun watching on my phone with a happy, curious bobcat of a baby crawling everywhere.
Sure.
And then I watched all day yesterday with our pal Richard Johnson back here on the East Coast. Had a couple TVs going. Had a nice pizza for dinner. And I'm generally a happy guy. I got to sleep at a reasonable hour since nothing was crazy at the end of the night.
Excellent.
And here I am sipping on some throat coat tea to get me back to 100%.
Throat coat tea. Well, why don't we get rolling? Let's dive right in. We got a bunch to discuss here. But we first need to start with your Rivalry Week reverbs. Have a listen.
Dan, Ty, this is Curtis in Lincoln. Just when I thought I had seen it all, Ole Miss just literally leaked away the Egg Bowl. I love this sport.
Hey, Dan and Ty, Joe in Oxford, England.
Hey, guys, this is Mike from Oakland, California.
Hey, this is Cass and Ella calling from Knoxville, Tennessee.
This is Drew from Richmond. There will be no more streaking in Charlottesville. Unless you are streaking the lawn. Yahoo! See you in Charlotte, baby. Wahoo!
Wah! Does Virginia Tech have a Virginia problem?
I never thought I would see the day, but the day has finally come. The Hoos have beaten the Hokies.
Happy Thanksgiving, Verballers. I guess Mississippi State has the leg up in the Egg Bowl rivalry. Hell State.
It looks like for Thanksgiving, Dabo Swinney found out how to properly three-hour crockpot a Gamecock. My gosh, that was beautiful.
Mike Leach can't beat Chris Peterson even after seven tries. And when he's asked in post-game, he yells at the press and cries.
Help. My wife is mad at me because I haven't made the reverb line all season. We're 11-1. Sick'em Bears.
Just keep winning, Baylor. Just keep winning.
Lynn Bowden is a dude.
O-C-A-T-S-K-K-K.
Guys, I think Lynn Bowden might be the best monsoon game player of all time.
Hey, boys. Bull in Ohio. Long-time listener, long-time Michigan fan. 9 years disappointed.
So Michigan just went for it, 4th-and-1 at their own 30-yard line? I thought the Buckeyes played James Franklin last week.
Hey, this is Robert from Ann Arbor, and I'm just wondering if we should reassess this whole football thing.
Jake Fromm and the Dogs just went 3 years in a row, 11-1, and Dogs fans complained all the way to it.
Georgia versus Georgia Tech. You know what that means. Throw those records out the window. Here we go. And what's the score?
I'd like to apologize for the Northwestern offense this entire year. But all that matters, we brought home the hat for the fifth year in a row.
Calling from Sanford Field. Notre Dame just won again in convincing fashion. Khalid Kareem with the front door cover. Ian with another 4-touchdown performance. Go Irish.
This is Eric in Iowa City calling to tell you that Iowa indeed has better corn.
I'm just wondering if you could honor PJ Fleck with a boat race sound drop on Wisconsin. Let's go get crushed by Ohio State.
You better watch out. You better not cry. You better look out, Buckeyes. I'm telling you why. Jonathan Taylor is coming to town.
Hi, I'm Will. My Auburn Tigers just won the Iron Bowl. I just rolled my front yard. War damn Eagle.
This is Quinlan from Texas. And Mac Jones, all he does is throw touchdown passes to both teams.
Jalen Waddle, dude.
I think Coach Saban has a Tiger problem. Might want to look into that.
Just getting back from the Iron Bowl. And all I gotta say is, what the heck was that? I mean, what the heck was that?
This is Lucas calling from inside Jordan-Hare Stadium. Does Nick Saban have a little
little bit of Chad Morris in him.
This is James in Georgia, and I just got to watch the Iron Bowl with my 8-month-old boy and got to go roll our yard. War damn Eagle, baby.
The best part about Auburn's win today is that we don't have to hear about Gus Malzahn's buyout for at least another 9 months.
Thank you, owe our guy Andy Ludwig an apology. Since he's been at Utah, he is 24-1 now as the offensive coordinator.
I can't believe I'd ever be able to say this, but we are one victory away from the college football playoff. Go Utes.
This is Aki from snowy Finland. It's currently 10 a.m. and I'm enjoying a late breakfast while watching Army Hawaii turning into a shootout. Could be worse.
Ah, there you go, Dan. So much passion. You can hear it dripping off those calls.
I'm going to miss you most, confused emotion guy. You know who you are. Yes, I think we should start getting into it. And I think we should probably start with, we got to do Iron Bowl.
Got to do the Iron Bowl. So,
yeah.
Final score was Auburn 48, Alabama 45. We texted each other around halftime and came to the conclusion then that this was a fun game. This game was fun as
hell. Oh, yeah, it was.
Fun game. Alabama with a failed field goal attempt to end the game, which has been a bit of a recurring theme in the Iron Bowl. This time,
almost to end the game. Yeah.
Yeah, to almost end the game. This time was a 30-yarder that doinked off the left upright. And I guess the story for me was, well, several fold. First off.
Oh, hit me.
Outside of the two pick sixes, and I know those are two big pick sixes.
Yeah, those are very catchable balls.
I thought Mac Jones looked pretty good. Is that fair to say?
Definitely, yeah.
I thought Mac Jones looked okay. It didn't look like the moment was too big for him.
For a backup quarterback against a good defense, definitely.
He would start on 100 other college teams. How many would he start on?
He was fine, yeah. He was pretty good.
He looked pretty good. He seemed calm. He seemed composed. He seemed like he knew what he was doing back there.
There are certain advantages Mac Jones has built in playing for what looks to be the best scoring offense of the modern era. But yeah.
Secondly, both defenses looked really gettable here in a way that I was not prepared for. 48, 45, yeah. 93 total points. Auburn's clearly made the bigger plays defensively, being so they had the Smoke Monday pick six, which I love that name, and then the long 100-yard pick six, which was a total backbreaker. But both defenses look very gettable. I was surprised at how well Auburn moved the ball on Alabama. That catch you by surprise?
Absolutely. There was a ton about Alabama that caught me by surprise. I mean, it catches me by surprise every week that Alabama's receivers are what they are, and there's 11 of them. It catches me by surprise that Alabama hasn't been able to develop a defense with as much talent as they have. I know there's been key injuries, but there was a ton about the 2019 Alabama season that caught me by surprise.
And then the final takeaway, to your point of, well, the field goal almost cost them the game.
Right.
Bama could have gotten the ball back. They probably should have gotten the ball back if not for a weird illegal substitution penalty on fourth down and four with like a minute left on the clock. Auburn's going to punt it away, right?
Yes. Well, first of all, let's start there, just in terms of the moments in this game. Alabama shot themselves in the foot because of some Gus Malzahn trickery in lining up his punter at receiver screwing up the substitution pattern because should we have Jalen Waddell deep? They're in an offensive formation in like the Wildcat, but the punter's on the field. And so Gus Malzahn really, really screwed Nick Saban and like the timing of substitutions. That was intentional. So that good on Auburn for that bit at the end of the game. Also, at the end of the first half, I know Alabama fans seem like they're upset because they felt like a second shouldn't be enough time to get off a snap and kick a field goal. But I was watching a number of shows and they reviewed the actual rules, and Nick Saban was conflating the 3 seconds you need to clock the ball and the actual time you need to snap it and run a play. Those
correct.
Different
That's
things.
Correct. Yes.
So Auburn's 1 second field goal was fine by the letter of the law, as hazy as that rule may be, and maybe it'll be addressed, but that actually was okay. We've talked about what it takes to beat Alabama, the modern version of Alabama. We've talked about a lot of fearlessness downfield and big receivers and coming up with turnovers. Auburn decided 2 pick sixes, a bunch of field goals. We're going to build this quilt in a weird way. And they did. They did. It worked. Bo Nix made plays. He wasn't terrific. To use a Thanksgiving analogy, his turkey was dry. It wasn't seasoned at different points of the leg and breast and thigh.
But it was cooked.
It was cooked through, and he served it on time.
It was cooked through. He served it on time. And that's kind of been the story of Bo Nix all year. There have been plenty of moments where Bo Nix has come up pretty big. The numbers wouldn't indicate a stellar quarterback by any stretch of the imagination, but he comes up big when he has to.
Yes. Najee Harris, total dude, just in leading this team, both on the ground and some quality catches. Jaylen Waddle was absurd, both in the return game, obviously, and finding the end zone three times as a receiver. I think your comments about Mac Jones were spot on. I think it was the first pick six when he was like, all right, I'm going sort of deep. And then, nope, I'm going to go short. And like, oh, the ball's already released. And it just found its way to Auburn. So an incredible win for Auburn, patching together a weird quilt of victory. And God, just Bobby Whitlow was very good. They just came up with plays. It was strange. They kicked the ball well. I think it was what, Anders Carlson?
Yep.
It was a wild TV show, and I'm glad I got to watch it.
Every Alabama-Auburn game feels a little bit like that, where there are weird moments, and things happen, and it's part of the reason why the Iron Bowl is so much fun to watch. But definitely one of those Vegas knows something-y kind of games. As we saw the point spread beforehand, I jumped in on it. I was all in on Alabama, but Vegas knew this was going to be close, and lo and behold, it was. Alabama now finishes 10-2. Auburn finishes 9-3. We'll have to wait to see what bowl season has in store for both those teams. But suffice to say, a really good way for Auburn to close out its season. 9-win year, freshman quarterback's a pretty big deal.
Yeah. Vegas also knew that Tua would not be playing in this
It helps.
Game.
It helps. Yeah. Yeah. The other big game of the day did not have nearly as much drama.
LSU 50. Texas A&M 7. Okay, you're going somewhere.
I'm talking Ohio State 56.
Yeah.
Michigan 27, Dan.
Guess who just got murdered?
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
For about a quarter and a half, this one looked like it was going to be close. Shea Patterson, he's finding open guys over the middle. Got some scoring going back and forth.
Sure.
But then Ohio State, you know, they tinker. Make some tweaks on defense. And I don't know if it's a crock potting here or a boat race or a reverse sear, but Ohio State just pulled away. They scored exactly 14 points in every quarter. They were remarkably consistent. In the end, Shea Patterson, who started off, I thought, looking pretty good, finishes 18 of 43 through the air. That number might be somewhat misleading because it didn't feel to me like he had a bad game. It underscores my point from the preview show when I said that he alone was not enough to win this game for Michigan.
Right.
The other thing here is that the Michigan defense truly had no answer for Justin Fields or J.K. Dobbins, more so with Dobbins, who had over 200 yards on the ground, four touchdowns. Fields seemed off at first, but he pulled it together. The fact that Ohio State put up 577 on this Michigan defense is pretty telling.
Yeah, well, it's nothing new, actually, for Ohio State to throttle this Michigan defense recently, but I think all of your points are correct. J.K. Dobbins is the engine that makes this Ohio State offense go, and the fact that Justin Fields offers what he does both through the air and with his legs and playing on an injured knee. That came out after the game, that he has an MCL injury that he suffered, I think, last week against Penn State. He left for a series and came back and I think immediately threw a touchdown, throwing away from his body. It's a pretty incredible quarterback.
Yeah,
that's a pretty terrific thing to do on a beat up.
It looked kind of scary, though.
Yeah,
it kind of looks scary.
Sure.
Guy gets pushed into his knee, sort of goes a little bit sideways. He's down on the ground. I audibly yelled. Solid wife Kate and my mother in law were here.
Yeah,
and they sort of just did the head bob, like, "Whoa, you okay over there?"
Yeah,
I was afraid for Justin Fields' knee. I'm glad he's okay.
Yes, 100% glad he's okay, because I don't think there's a Mac Jones. I don't think there is a competent person behind him who can make this Ohio State offense go even 75% of the way that he can. And, you know, maybe that's a story for another day. But Garrett Wilson was spectacular through the air with big plays. Chris Olave had that long touchdown catch that I thought was more on Justin Fields, just a terrific throw. He struggled sometimes downfield. And Michigan-wise, I just... If you are going to beat Ohio State, if you are going to beat any good team that has more talent than you, baseline, you have to play a clean game. And the drops, the penalties, the turnovers, we saw Shea Patterson fumble it in the red zone. We saw, a late hit out of bounds. We saw just nonsense from Michigan. They were the less disciplined team, which has nothing to do with talent. That's coaching and that's mental. And Michigan failed that. They were in that game until they took themselves, along with Ohio State, out of it. And so if you can't help your own cause in that regard, you're just not going to come. You're not going to be in it in the fourth quarter ever against a team as talented as Ohio State. No matter how good your coaches are, no matter how deep your offense or defense is, Michigan missed moments. They just were not anywhere near the most disciplined team in this game. And it showed. Ohio State was just happy to take advantage. We talk about teams that aren't necessarily as great as Ohio State, but are disciplined enough to take advantage of teams who aren't.
Yeah.
And that's it. You know,
that's it.
If you're more talented and cleaner, you're going to win 11 or 12 games every year. That's just the reality of college football. So I don't know how close the gap actually is between Michigan and Ohio State. They finished 9-3. I don't think they've had consecutive double-digit win seasons, regular seasons, under Harbaugh. And so that's the next mountain. You know, not losing to Wisconsin, not losing to Penn State when you just play nothing in the first half and play competently in the second. Ohio State is not the mountain for Michigan. I understand the rivalry. I understand the history. The mountain is getting to the point where you are Ohio State-esque, as probably dirty as that sounds for Michigan fans. And they're just not there. If they're dropping games to Wisconsin and Penn State, they're not on Ohio State's level.
9-3, as you said, is the final tally in the regular season. We'll have to do the post-mortem at some point soon on Michigan football. No doubt a lot to unpack there. And then on the Ohio State side, look, 12-0, they're playing Wisconsin in the Big Ten Championship. We'll talk about the Wisconsin game momentarily. They have won 8 straight in the series, and Jim Harbaugh is 0-5 in his time at Michigan in the big old game. So Ohio State keeps on rolling. I thought very impressively here the way they continued consistently throughout the game here to score points, to put Michigan in bad spots. We will see much more of them, not only in the Big Ten game, but whichever way this whole playoff thing ends up bouncing. I am very curious to see how they match up against a team like an LSU or a Clemson or whoever ends up coming in that fourth seed. We could see Ohio State as the number one seed.
Sure. Could be Oklahoma, which I think would be pretty nice for Ohio State. Could be Utah, which I think is going to be pretty tricky for anybody, but we'll see.
All right. Staying in the Big Ten, I mentioned Wisconsin. If you weren't a Conehead before, Dan, and let's be honest, most of us weren't.
Right.
Maybe you are now. Jack Cohn. 2 huge touchdown passes to turn the tide. One at the end of the first half, another at the start of the second. After that, Wisconsin relies on their rushing game and defense. They finished the job here. 38-17 on the road in a snowy TCF Bank Stadium.
Thank God they're out of the Metrodome. This is so much better.
Yeah. Outdoors in the elements. Wisconsin ended up leading 38-10 midway through the fourth quarter. And, you know, this wasn't so much a matter of Minnesota doing anything wrong, per se.
Ooh, disagree.
Well, they actually edged Wisconsin in time of possession. We know that's their style of play, and it would have been more in their favor if they didn't turn the ball over twice.
Right.
It's just their drives stalled out. They couldn't get any momentum going against this Wisconsin defense, especially after Wisconsin had a 28-point lead. Do you disagree?
No, I think that's all right. I mean, you saying that Minnesota didn't do much wrong, I think, belies Minnesota's Saturday. They did a bunch wrong.
They did it wrong to the extent that they could not continue drives against Wisconsin.
Yeah. I don't think they protected Tanner Morgan all that well. I don't think they ran the ball all that well.
Running the ball has been an issue for them.
Yeah.
In spots this year.
I think had he had one long run, and that was sort of it for the running game. Also, and just big picture of this game in Wisconsin, because I just piling on Minnesota after they've had a really terrific season doesn't seem like the right way to approach this. You know that weird flex that strength coaches and like offensive linemen do when it's like 11 degrees and they don't wear sleeves?
Yep, yep.
They just wear. That was Wisconsin deciding, oh, it's snowing and it's freezing out. We're winning this through the air. we're going vertical. We're going screen game. We're going away from Jonathan Taylor tailback. We're winning this one with Jack Cohn and Quintez Cephas, who's very good, by the way.
Very good.
We're abandoning what got us here. And you know what? We're going to do it well.
We're all Cone heads today.
They
baby.
Did. Yeah. They won this game essentially by 4 touchdowns without, you know, Minnesota scored later on. But holy moly, Wisconsin. Nice way to bounce back after the Illinois loss. Great
for
job.
Sure. Absolutely. 38-17 is your final. Minnesota going 10-2 is a huge coup. Huge coup for that program. They've got a lot coming back again next year. So a lot to build on there. Hopefully PJ Fleck sticks around. We'll have to wait and see on that as we enter the coaching funny season. But suffice to say, 10-2 is a pretty big deal for the Golden Gophers.
Did you see his speech after the game, by the way?
What's that?
PJ Fleck? Did you see PJ Fleck's speech
I didn't.
After the game?
No.
Like a motivational speaker. I couldn't decide if I liked it or not. It was like, we're not looking back. I failed you. And it was in his press conference.
It was
vintage PJ. It's great.
And on the Wisconsin side, look, I think they started the year with the world on fire and had a ton of momentum. It didn't quite work out the way we thought early in the year when the defense was just like unstoppable. But 10-2 is a pretty good year. They're going to the Big Ten championship. So not bad.
They beat a MAC division champ 61-0.
How about it?
Central Michigan, Jim McElwain. Yeah, nice bounce back for Wisconsin. They got run on a little by Nebraska. Obviously, the close win over Iowa, but beating up on Purdue, beating up on Minnesota, going to Indianapolis for carpet game part due, or try not to lose 59-0 part due.
Part due.
Yeah. So, hey, good for Bucky.
And my only other headliner here, and then we'll rifle through a bunch of other matchups and rivalries. We had Bedlam.
Yeah,
night.
We did.
34-16 was your final here. Oklahoma gets the W. Jalen Hurts with a passing, rushing, and receiving touchdown.
I saw that and threw up the Dez Bryant X after grabbing his variation of a Philly special.
The Philly special. The Philly special works about 98% of the time.
Which was like a Baker Mayfield special, to be clear. He did that before the Philly special in the Rose Bowl.
That's correct. That is correct. Thoughts, takeaways here on Oklahoma's win?
Tough to beat Oklahoma and score with Oklahoma with your backup quarterback, as Drew Brown is, and had some difficulties against an Oklahoma defense that I thought has gotten at least feistier than they were midway through the year. You know, they tightened up against Baylor. TCU, I don't think, has much of an offense, but against an Oklahoma State team that has been able to run the ball pretty well. I thought they shut down Chuba Hubbard appropriately enough, knowing his big playability.
That was, that was sort of my takeaway. He got his 100 yards, but it wasn't such that he killed them.
Pre-dude alert, Parnell Motley for Oklahoma. Had himself a terrific game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, nice win for Oklahoma on the road against a Poke team that has been, you know, pretty good when they're healthy, but missing some significant playmakers on offense. They're just not going to be the same way. And Oklahoma is definitely good enough, and they've lost their own guys on offense. Kennedy Brooks had a terrific game. CeeDee Lamb, I think, led the charge, but they didn't have to do much through the air because they just ran all the hell over Oklahoma State. So nice 11-1 year for Oklahoma. They finish out with Baylor in a rematch in Arlington and Jerry World?
Yep.
Good for them.
Yeah, and also good for them, Alabama losing. Because
yes.
I think the way this sets up, it's probably going to go to either Utah or the winner of the Big 12 game, that final playoff spot. Now, I know Georgia is ahead of all three of those teams presently, but they're most likely going to lose to LSU.
They're down receivers, which we can get into.
Yeah.
I suppose it depends on the tenor of that game. I would not put a Georgia team that loses anything less than a just 1% type game I don't know what that actually looks like, 28-27, where they both look amazing. But even still, I don't want two teams from the same conference in the playoff.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem fun to me. I don't want a rematch of Georgia-LSU. So I would let it come down to, if Georgia wins that game, would I put LSU in? That's tougher.
Yeah.
That's tougher, but I don't want a rematch. LSU had a shot to win their conference, and they lost it in this scenario. So everybody's got shots. Everything can be settled on the field, to all those people who want things settled on the field. So to me, it comes down to Oklahoma, Utah, if Utah is able to take care of business against Oregon, and same for Oklahoma and Baylor.
We shall see what happens, but
yes.
Let's go through a bunch of other action. We'll stay here in the SEC. You mentioned LSU. They win 50-7. Over Texas A&M. So Joe Burrow
wasn't even that close.
No. Joe Burrow gets his, 352 and 3 touchdowns, and Jamar Chase went crazy. The stats are kind of old news at this point.
Right.
What was noteworthy from my standpoint was the LSU defense. Really good here. They forced punts on A&M's first 7 drives. Then they got an interception on the 8th. They had 5 sacks, a ton of pressure. Kellen Mond just 10 of 30. For 92 yards and 3 interceptions. Of course, LSU is 12-0 and their first unbeaten season since 2011.
Yeah.
And all that. But the defensive component here against, I still think, a pretty good 7-5 team, Texas A&M, was very notable.
Yeah, Texas A&M can thrive in like a no-dunk rec league. That's who Texas A&M is. You're doing a good job of trying to pat people on the back and find the silver lining. When you're down 31-0 at halftime, it's a rough silver lining. LSU came out and they talked about still, you know, being upset about how things ended last year with the punch after the game, and that they were locked in on A&M, especially A&M a week after a tough loss and not a letdown spot, because you're going to stay focused for LSU on the road. But man, Joe Burrow, I think he's now the all-time SEC passing leader. Did you see who he passed? Chris Relph. No, Tim Couch.
Wow.
Yes, Tim Couch. And so Joe Burrow leaves a conquering hero in his final game in Death Valley. And I don't know what more you can say. Jamar Chase was incredible, and they just torched A&M over and over and over again. And it was sort of the, with Herb Brooks as the Team USA hockey again, yeah. Again.
Right.
And that's what it was. It was again and again LSU and nothing and nothing Aggies.
They will square off against Georgia, as we said a few moments ago, in the SEC title game. Georgia won 52-7 over Georgia Tech. It's the biggest win over Georgia Tech in the history of this matchup. Something to watch now, as you mentioned earlier, Georgia's wide receiving core is a bit banged up. Lawrence Cager done for the year after an ankle injury. George Pickens also got the boot for fighting in the third quarter of this game, which means he's going to be out for the first half of the SEC title game as well. Thankfully, even though DeAndre Swift did get hurt in this one, it does look like he's going to be okay for next week. So we shall see. 52-7, your final. Georgia goes 11-1. Georgia Tech, in the midst of their own reclamation project, they go 3-9.
Yeah, slow start for Jake Fromm, but got it together. And they look to be a little bit more creative against a pretty woeful Georgia Tech team. So we'll see if that carries over to Atlanta.
Florida beats Florida State 40-17. It was close for about a quarter, but then picked up steam in a hurry. Florida led by 23 at half. Kyle Trask, nice day. 3 touchdowns in the first 2 quarters. He finishes with 343 through the air on the night. Florida goes 10-2. FSU finishes 6-6. They're going to go to a bowl.
Yeah, a very strange and obviously successful season for the Gators to win 10 games after their quarterback goes down almost immediately in Felipe Franks. And honestly, they could have dropped 60 on Florida State. They missed some wide open stuff. There were some execution issues, but that is nitpicking on a crazy level when you win a rivalry game by 23 at home and do it with your backup quarterback and do it with, you know, spreading the ball around to all sorts of receivers, which seemed like something we haven't said about Florida until Dan Mullen has taken over in a long time. So a fun watch for Florida, and wait and see where they go.
Speaking of backup quarterbacks, let's talk about my boy Lynn Bowden Jr., Dan.
Oh, my God.
Kentucky 45, Louisville 13. Whoa. Kentucky takes home the Governor's Cup with a school record 5-17 on the ground. And they did it on just 40 carries. Now, I know averages can sometimes be deceiving, but it's fun to do the math. back of the napkin, 13 yards per carry, led, of course, by one Lynn Bowden Jr. 22 carries, 284, and four touchdowns for the converted wideout, Daniel.
One of my favorite things in college football is when a team is successfully predictable. When they just, we see what's working, we're not going to do anything different. We know we've had multiple quarterbacks get hurt and we're running a receiver out there to basically just run the ball or hand the ball off every play. And we know you can't stop it. So we're going to throw the ball twice.
Yeah, that's right.
In a game, Lynn Bowden Jr., just not even a dude, just a different kind of dude.
Just a different level dude. Yeah.
I saw you. I was talking to our pal Richard and Richard Johnson, Lynn Bowden's still the leading receiver for Kentucky, even though he hasn't been a receiver in a long time, because obviously he doesn't throw the ball, so nobody can really catch up. What an incredible year for Kentucky to finish out 7-5, losing what they lost on offense and what they lost after last year's pretty amazing season, to finish with a win over a rival decisively. Great job, Wildcats.
Shall we talk about the Egg Bowl now?
Let's, yeah. My bladder's empty, so I'm good.
Mississippi State 21, Ole Miss 20. They're calling this one the PAT. That's PEE-A-T.
I like that.
Or in this case, it's a missed PAT. So what happened was Elijah Moore for Ole Miss caught a touchdown pass.
Ole Miss.
With just 4 seconds left on the clock. He then proceeded to do the crawl like a dog, and he lifted the leg like he was taking a pee.
Something you've seen, Ty. Up
indeed.
Close.
The refs, of course, called an unsportsmanlike penalty on that. The 35-yard point after attempt because of the penalty was then missed by Ole Miss kicker Luke Logan. Long story short, the 116th Egg Bowl goes to Mississippi State. Strangely, not the only time we've seen a penalty for the simulated dog pee. Remember when DK Metcalf did that a couple years ago?
Of course. I like that this is what it's come down to.
Absolutely.
Ole Miss actually moved the ball pretty well through the air. Jerry Neely, was pretty good on the ground. I scrubbed through this game pretty quickly because I knew what was coming at the end, and so I wanted to get through to there. But, you know, good for State for holding on and salvaging and becoming bowl eligible. And what at times, and by at times, I mean basically since September, has been a pretty ugly year. Their October was a disaster, and to finish out winning, what, 3 of 4? I know one of them was against, what, Abilene Christian. But you win your rivalry game, you go to a bowl game as a team who has seen some pretty dark days. Okay, fine. But they should be winning more with Joe Moorhead. They should be more competitive. I hope it is the case next year.
Tennessee wins 28-10 on the legs of big play Eric Gray, the freshman, 246 yards and 3 touchdowns. Some big runs in this one, a 56-yard touchdown run, a 94-yard touchdown run. Maybe he can play quarterback, Dan. Tennessee does finish 7-5. They're going to a bowl. Vandy just 3-9.
Yeah, we should also mention, by the way, if we don't mention weather at all in these games, please always assume that we are implying that there was bad weather that affected
big time.
Because all across the country, and we, I guess, can be more specific about certain games. We mentioned the Minnesota and the snowstorm, but there was just wind and sleet and rain all over the damn place, and that affected things. And, you know, as it relates to Tennessee, good for Eric Gray. The gray area was the entire field.
And finally, Mizzou beats Arkansas by 10. They finish 6-6, but they also put the finishing touches on Barry Odom. As we said at the top of the show, he will not return next year to be head football coach in Columbia.
Yeah, I saw the AD talk after the game, and just this football's a revenue driver. People stopped showing up. People stopped buying season tickets. We think we can do better. I think he's right.
I think he's right.
6-6 with this schedule, you should be better. Losing to Vandy, you should do better. Losing to Kentucky without a quarterback, you should do better. Losing to Tennessee like they did, you should do better. So
right.
I don't know who that is, but Mizzou is in the market for a new coach.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Over in the Big Ten, this game was on Friday. It was Iowa 27, Nebraska 24. A good game. It didn't start that way. Early in the second quarter, the Hawkeyes led by 14, 17-3. And then at halftime, it was 24-10. You're thinking, all right, Iowa's got this one in the bag.
Yeah, they've been running on Nebraska, so they should be able to just sit on them for another couple quarters, for sure.
But then Nebraska comes back. They storm back. They tie it at 24-all in the third quarter. The fourth quarter, scoreless, until Keith Duncan from Iowa kicks a 48-yard game winner as time expires. Did a little bit of taunting afterwards, but I guess that's okay. Iowa finishes 9-3. Nebraska drops to 0-6 against top 25 opponents under Scott Frost as the Huskers finish 5-7. Daniel, any thoughts here?
Do you know how hard it is to allow Iowa to rush for 7 yards a carry? Do you know the degree of difficulty involved? I don't think they've done that against a Power 5 team this year.
No.
They haven't rushed for more than, no, they haven't rushed for more than 3 yards, 3-point-something yards a carry against a Power 5 team. Tyler Goodson was terrific. Mekhi Sargent was terrific. ISM made plays. But Iowa just shutting it down for a half, whether it's the first half or the second half on offense, is extremely Iowa. Good for Keith Duncan for kicking the game winner and blowing kisses to the home crowd in the weather.
Yeah.
And rough day for that. I don't know if you saw the quote that Scott Frost gave about Joe Burrow when he was looking around to transfer from Ohio State. He confidently, I think this was Dennis Dodd, but he confidently, allegedly said, you know, he's better than our guy here about Joe Burrow.
Mm.
And you know what? Maybe he wouldn't have been in Lincoln, but
in hindsight,
yeah, he is. Yeah, he is. So good for Iowa to finish out the season strong. Nebraska, God, it wasn't that long ago where they were a Big Ten West dark horse.
No.
Or even like top 10 dark horse, top 15 dark horse.
It was only like 3 months ago.
I looked it up, Ty, and this is piling on and not fair at all, but here we are. I looked it up and there was a Nebraska fan site or blog or something that had posted a Twitter poll before the season. Where do you think Nebraska finishes? And it was like playoff, Big Ten champ, Big Ten West champ, or like somewhere between 6 and 8 wins. That was the fourth and lowest option.
Right.
They went 5-7.
All right. The old Oaken bucket.
Yeah.
You laughed at me when I took Purdue plus the points here.
Okay.
You laughed at me.
They lost.
You tried to shame me.
Okay.
They covered
weather
the spread.
Tie. Psh, weather, you know.
When the old Oaken bucket, Dan, is on the line, you throw those records out. You know how it works.
That's true.
So Indiana leads 28-10 late in the third quarter. But that's when Xander Horvath and Aiden O'Connell go to work. We know this.
Guy Xander, yeah.
We know this. Game came back. Purdue came back, made it a game, went to double overtime. Peyton Ramsey again gets the job done when he has to propel Indiana to a win here to take home the old Oaken bucket. They finish a year 8-4. Purdue on their side goes 4-8.
Maybe I'm aging myself here. Didn't Indiana have a Xander? Xander Diamond? Is that a name that exists?
Yeah, I think so.
Indiana and Xanders. Shout out. Yeah, really nice win for the Hoosiers. Get the bucket back in Bloomington. And I know you had a crush. You've had a crush in Indiana throughout the years for them to go 8-4 in a pretty tough
Big deal.
Big Ten.
It's a big deal.
For Purdue to show the fight with how beat up they are, down to what is their third string quarterback in Aiden O'Connell, down Elijah Sindelar and Jack Plummer, and no Rondale Moore for a pretty wide swath of the year. Good for Purdue. It's very dumb to say after you go 4-8, but at least they didn't just fully collapse like some of their brethren in the conference did. And again, nice return because he was beat up for a little while for Wap Philiop, I believe is how.
Yep.
Philior, excuse me. That would be nice if it rhymed. And fun ending. Great time.
Michigan State 19, Maryland 16. Okay.
You see the crowd at Spartan Stadium, by the way, for this game?
Not great.
No, it was... It made me feel bad.
Yeah, not great.
It made me feel bad that this was an open stadium, open for operation, and there were people working turnstiles and ushers, and it was for this.
Not great.
Michigan State bowl eligible.
Michigan State bowl eligible. They get a 33-yard field goal, a little over 2 minutes left from Matt Coughlin. 19-16 to get to 6-6. Maryland, by the way, started 2-0. Had the world on fire, then they went 1-9. So some more work to do.
Anthony McFarland, nice day.
Nice day.
Yeah.
And to close out the Big Ten, we had Penn State 27-6 over Rutgers. Penn State, I think, just trying to get this thing over with. They finished 10-2. Wasn't at all an impressive game. They started Will Levis, but 3 touchdowns for Journey Brown. They get the W at home to close out the year. Rutgers on their end. It sounds like they've agreed to terms with Greg Schiano. Like this weird mating dance they've been doing the last couple weeks has finally culminated with him being back.
Yep.
In Piscataway. So Rutgers closes out 2-10, but looks like they're going back to the future with Greg Schiano. And Northwestern wins by 19 points. Is that right?
Brandon Peters was out for Illinois. There was a lot of guys out for Illinois, but Northwestern gets on the board in the Big Ten. Never a dull moment. And I don't know if there was anything to add to Penn State Rutgers
that was a bad game. Bad game.
I hope Will Levis is not the quarterback of the future. That was a tough watch, him in the pocket.
No.
Him trying to complete passes. I know he had that long touchdown pass on that scramble, but otherwise. And I also saw Justin Shorter enter the transfer portal.
Transfer portal, yeah.
Former number one receiver in the country.
Yep.
But Penn State is I think they're in a pretty good position at receiver. So we'll see. Yeah, I think you're right. They just wanted to get the season done with. 10 wins, again, good for them. I think 3 out of the last 4 years.
Yep.
Cool.
Not bad.
Yeah.
All right. Virginia 39, Virginia Tech 30. A good game in the Commonwealth Cup. Back and forth the whole way. Virginia kicks a 48-yard field goal with 1:23 left to make it 33-30, and then they strip Hendon Hooker in his own end zone. They fall on the ball. They missed a 2-point conversion, but that's how you get to 39-30. The stats in this game are almost carbon copies. It's ridiculous. Both teams, 311 passing yards. Virginia with 181 on the ground compared to Tech's 172. One team was 4 of 15 on third downs. The other was 5 of 14. The biggest difference here was the 4 turnovers for Virginia Tech versus just 1 for UVA here. Big win for UVA. The first one in, 15 years? Something crazy 15, like 16 that?
16 years, yeah, since 2003. I would also say a pretty significant difference between Virginia Tech and the Hoos is Bryce Perkin wears a Virginia uniform.
Yes.
And let's talk about the number 17 real quick, because that's the number of yards that Virginia had on the day that didn't involve Bryce Perkins. And the number of yards that did were almost 400. So Bryce Perkins was incredible. He did it all himself. I mean, he found guys, but when plays were breaking down, or designed runs, he was just everything. He was everything for Virginia. Goes for 164 on the ground, over 300 through the air. And what an immense, immense talent for Virginia at quarterback, something they have not had. And also reminded me the fact that both Bryce Perkins and Brady White were backup quarterbacks for ASU.
Wow.
So, you know, fun how things shake out. Good for Virginia winning the Coastal, a pretty wide open Coastal essentially the entire way. And they'll face Clemson in the ACC championship game.
I've got them right now at about a 24-point dog.
Okay.
Against Clemson
won. It'd be nice to see Virginia with a healthy secondary, but alas.
It would. Clemson won by 35 in the Palmetto Bowl over South Carolina. Not really much to add here. Trevor Lawrence was perfect. Clemson wins their 27th straight game. Obviously, they are 12-0. South Carolina, rough year. Rough year, rough schedule, yes. Injuries, a lot to deal with, but 4-8 is the final tally there. Elsewhere, we had Syracuse.
Yeah.
Winning in overtime over Wake Forest. It's been such a bad year for Syracuse, but yet They always find a way to pull a weird one in the Carrier Dome, don't they?
They do. It was largely on the ground for Syracuse. I didn't watch a lot of this game. I watched the end of this game. Strange ending, but good for the Orange pulling it out.
Elsewhere, Boston College 26, Pitt 19. A.J. Dillon, a big game, 178, had a long touchdown run, which swung momentum early in the third quarter for Boston College. They get bowl eligible. 6-6, Pitt was already bowl eligible, but they finished 7-5.
Mm-hmm.
We had Duke beating Miami.
Oh, God. First of all, congratulations to Boston College on not just getting bowl eligible, but beating Pitt for the fourth time this season. I feel like every third week we're saying, hey, nice win for BC over Pitt. Or, hey, Pitt got by BC. Good for Kenny Pickett.
Do we have to replay the Jaren Williams game we played on Mayflower Monday?
We might need to.
We might need to take a knee here. Talk about limping to the finish.
Right.
Miami Hurricanes.
Can't lose to Duke. You just can't.
This is like the scene in The Matrix where Morpheus is trying to run and jump into the helicopter, but gets clipped by a bullet and is just sort of hoping he's got enough momentum to leap up and jump and reach the helicopter without falling to his death.
I don't think they're going to play the clip of you saying that at their postseason team banquet tie.
They may not, but that's how I felt the last couple weeks with Miami football.
Yeah, Miami up at the half, and they basically do nothing on offense in the second half, allow Duke to come back in the fourth quarter. And this is not a good Duke team, but this is not a good Miami team. And even though we're only a year into the Manny Diaz experiment, which we'll call it after he took another job, and then 3 weeks later takes the job at Miami, I am...
Yeah, I mean, imagine Miami sitting there at 6-4, knowing they've got FIU and Duke left. You're thinking 8-4. I'm thinking 8-4.
Yeah.
Not 6-6, but yeah, an underwhelming way to close out the year.
Yeah, that's a culture, that's a coaching, that's motivation.
That's a problem.
All of the above. Yeah.
And finally, UNC runs it up on NC State 41-10, 401 passing yards for Sam Howell. Saves the best for last. He finishes the year. Get this.
I'm ready.
35 touchdown passes. That is an FBS record for a true freshman as UNC.
Terrific.
Gets the 6-6. They're bowl eligible in Mack Brown's first year, which I think is a pretty good accomplishment.
They have such a terrific, and he needs to work on some things, obviously. I think he can work on his accuracy. He can work on some early or slow starts. But in terms of true freshmen and now moving forward, true sophomores, et cetera, to build around, holy moly, Sam Howell has to be exciting for Tar Heel fans.
All right, let me read through four of the other games in the Big 12, and then we'll talk about them.
Okay.
We had Baylor Big, 61-6 over Kansas.
Yes.
We had Kansas State, 27-17 over Iowa State and Farmageddon.
Mm-hmm.
We had West Virginia, 20-17 over TCU. And we had Texas, 49-24 over Texas Tech, Dan.
Yes. Okay, so we'll go reverse order. Good for the Texas defense showing up and making Texas Tech one-dimensional at home. So
yep.
They get over that losing streak.
Yep, yep.
And a pretty complete game from the Texas offense, which is not something we have said in a little bit. Sam Ellinger had a nice game. Obviously, Devin Duvernay was just absurd against the Texas Tech secondary. And Roshan Johnson, the converted quarterback now in the backfield, had himself a nice day. TCU, just ugly. Just ugly, ugly offense, ugly performance at home against a West Virginia team who I'm actually like, you know, Neil Brown is my guy. Never met
he's
him, never
dude.
Spoken to him,
he's your dude.
But he's my guy. I think he's going to do some impressive things at West Virginia with some time. And so to keep that team motivated like he has, I think speaks volumes. There's not much to say about Baylor over Kansas Big. And you mentioned Kansas State, Iowa State. You mentioned Farmageddon.
27-17, yep.
Windy day. I know you like your wind. And it was Joshua Youngblood, I believe his name is, who gets his second, essentially, 100-yard kick return in 3 weeks. He did the same thing against Texas, and Iowa State just couldn't get it going. They couldn't, well, first of all, on defense, they couldn't stop Kansas State on the ground, and then offensively, it just, they weren't able to do all that much against the Kansas State team, who, again, another new coach who has this team motivated and excited for the future, And what, Brock Purdy did essentially nothing through the air, and they just couldn't get things going. It was a nice start for the Clones, but it was not four quarters of impressive football from Iowa State to finish out the year, a year in which I thought they were going to end up in the Big 12 championship game.
Yeah.
They rounded out at 7-5.
Yeah, what strikes me about each of these four games is that each one featured a new coach, at least a new coach at the start of the year. Kansas finishes 3-9. But I don't think we can sit here today, the 1st of December, and say that Kansas is in a worse spot than they were previously.
No.
First off, that'd be really hard to do. But Kansas, Kansas hung around a bunch of games this year.
They did.
They were at least more interesting and they played with more fire. And so I think by and large, the Les Miles hire, at least in year one, was a success. The Texas Tech move to get Matt Wells, that might take some time.
I mean, they lose their quarterback pretty early.
That's it might take some time, but losing British comedy legend Alan Bowman made it tough.
Mm-hmm.
Jet Duffy came in and filled in admirably, but 4-8, I think, feels about right to me. The West Virginia thing with Neil Brown, your dude.
Yes. Hit we some saw, lows for sure in the middle of the year.
Hit some lows. We saw they made the move to Jared Deggy.
Mm-hmm.
And I am curious to see how that plays moving forward. He transferred in. We know they started Austin Kendall, who also transferred in for most of the year, but this is a good way for West Virginia to close out. Finish 5-7, not going to a bowl, but I think we are pretty confident in what Neil Brown can do over the long haul.
The Mizzou loss is defensible, given it was the second week of the season. Obviously, beating a power like James Madison, FCS power, obviously beating a power like James Madison is impressive. And really, after that, the only game that they really have at least a case to be made that they should have been more competitive in was probably the Texas Tech game. But otherwise, beating Kansas State and beating TCU in year one of Neil Brown, losing what they did and knowing that it was going to be a struggle like it was, competing against Oklahoma State, competing the way they did against Baylor, and that was at Baylor, I think, on a Thursday night. So that was a short week on the road. I think it's, all things considered, there is, I wouldn't say it's a successful year, but there are positives to be taken in Morgantown.
And then K-State, Chris Klieman, 8-4, I think, is a success. Huge success.
Oh, my God.
Beat Oklahoma.
Yeah. I think as a first-year coach at Kansas State, or there's some record he set as a first-year coach for wins. So, yeah, I'm impressed with Kansas State. And I really do hope that they become that threat for the conference, and if not that, just an incredibly difficult out to everybody, which they just beat Oklahoma, so I think they're pretty damn close to that already.
Yeah. And finally, over in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
Tell me about the Civil War. What went down in the Civil War?
Must I?
Yes.
Oregon has a very difficult offense to watch, and it appears execute, which doesn't seem super smart for a team that has designs on winning a conference, if not more. But they won the game. They needed a long, long kick return to separate themselves, a touchdown return to separate themselves from an Oregon State team with the worst defense in the conference and starting Tristan Jebbia, their backup quarterback, because Jake Luton was out with an injury. And Oregon's offense is just problematic, troublesome for Oregon. I don't know how to describe it, but they got a win. They beat both of their rivals in Oregon State and Washington. They went to USC and won comfortably. They won the North a while ago. So big picture, it's a good year. Smaller picture, I don't know where they go with this offense. If they're not able to generate anything with Justin Herbert and this experienced line, I don't think they're running the right system. And I hope that there are more than just tweaks in the offseason. I try not to call for people's firings, but
no.
I hope the architecture of this offense is reevaluated moving forward as a way too caring fan.
24-10 was the final score. Oregon goes 10-2. Oregon State at 5-7. It's a pretty good, successful campaign for them, right?
Definitely. Dealing with the injuries, dealing with the depth issues that they are going to deal with, probably for not that much longer. I think they're going to ascend to that level of what we just talked about with Kansas State. They're going to be a tough out moving forward, at the very least.
Utah wins 45-15 over Colorado to close out their own 11-1 campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Colorado finishes 5-7, but Utah now is very much in the driver's seat. If they could knock off Oregon in the Pac-12 game, I think Utah deserves a hard look for that fourth playoff spot, given how consistent they've been on both sides of the ball. Again, remember, Utah's always been very good defensively. That's sort of been the calling card for Kyle Whittingham. Sure. But to have an offense performing at this high a level, this efficient, has not been a commonality. That's part of the reason why I'm excited to see what they could do on the big stage.
Tyler Huntley, terrific. Zach Moss, I mean, I think Colorado kind of focused on him pretty early and they kept it close. Slow start for the Utah offense, but they poured it on through the air, on the ground. In special teams, Damari Simpkins had a terrific punt return. This is a team operating really well in all phases with, and asterisk is too strong a word, but Utah has not, and to no fault of their own, they haven't been pushed. They haven't faced a team with comparable talents. You know, they've played Washington and basically USC. They lose to USC. Right. That's September. It's not fair to fully hold that performance against them. It was a short week, but they lost. That's a fact. And then on the road at Washington, they sort of tried to give away that game in the third quarter, but, you know, responded really impressively and put Washington away on the road. And they just, they've closed out November with non-headliner games. And so I think we're all pretty excited. I think I speak for the college football universe to see them Friday night against Oregon.
The Apple Cup goes to Washington for the seventh straight year. Did you happen to see the quote from Elijah Molden when they asked him about how did you get the job done here?
I didn't, but you can tell me.
Quote, they haven't switched up their plays, so we kept running the same stuff. What a dagger. What a dagger. Washington really changed the complexion of this game by pressuring Anthony Gordon. And on the flip side, Jacob Eason had a clean pocket for a good chunk of this game.
Yeah.
As we've said time and again about Purple Cutler, he's really good when the pocket's clean and looked every bit the part here. 31-13 was your final here. Washington finishes 7-5. Wazoo finishes 6-6. What were the weird antics here with Mike Leach, Dan? Did I miss something on the Mike Leach front?
Mike Leach is just, everybody thinks he's like super quirky and fun and has weird stories. And then just when you actually watch him speak about his team, he throws his players under the bus. When he loses, it's, well, they're so much, the recruits are so much better. Look at the recruiting rankings. They have so much more talent. We're just a little old Wazoo. But when they win, he's a genius. So it's gotten sort of tired to me. And honestly, watching the Apple Cup year over year, if a story were to break, that Jimmy Lake, the Washington Husky co-defensive coordinator, but I think he calls it, it's his defense. If a story were to break that he figured out the frequency of Washington State's headsets, that's how, one, in their head he is, and two, literally in their head, he knows what's coming. Because the Washington defense, I mean, they drop eight, they know what they're doing, and Anthony Gordon, I'm sure, felt like he was throwing into a sea of like 14 guys constantly.
Yeah.
So Washington, for all of their warts this year and, you know, the offensive struggles and closing out games and getting gashed on the ground, there are certain things you can just set your watch to. And that's the Huskies taking the Apple Cup over Mike Leach.
Arizona State wins by 10. They take home the Territorial Cup. Big game for Eno Benjamin, 34 carries. ASU finishes 7-5. Arizona finishes 4-8. Sounds like Kevin Sumlin is coming back next season. And Cal knocks off UCLA 28-18. They also finish 7-5. UCLA also finishes 4-8.
And by the way, I still contend Cal is a better team than 7-5 with Chase Garbers, but a lot of teams are with the healthy starting quarterback.
Cal will be an interesting selection come bowl season.
Yes.
And finally, to close out the Pac-12, Notre Dame knocks off Stanford 45-24. Notre Dame had a bit of a rocky start here, just to make sure nobody felt too confident about their next trip to Palo Alto.
Yeah.
But they turn it on, four touchdown passes from Ian Book. He has looked pretty good down the stretch. Notre Dame has looked really good in November, for what it's worth.
Right.
It does look like they're going to head to the Camping World Bowl in Orlando.
Okay.
As Notre Dame finishes 10-2. It's their third straight 10-win season.
All right. Special teams was very strong for Notre Dame, right? Both in terms of
yes.
recovering and blocking and taking advantage of Stanford miscues. A nice way to finish out the year for Notre Dame. And I didn't watch much of this game, admittedly. It just seemed very close for too long.
It was close for too long. Then eventually they started getting some momentum offensively. Yeah. And I think Ian Books looked better in the month of November.
For what? Braden Lindsey, the Oregon
Braden Lindsey, yep.
Yeah. Cool.
The other games here that I have listed on my sheet, and I'm sure you have more because you always do.
Mm-hmm.
I have UCF 34-7 in the war on I-4.
Yep.
UCF goes 9-3, USF 4-8. We'll have to wait to hear on the status of Charlie Strong. Doesn't sound very promising there.
Right.
And the only other one I have is Memphis 34, Cincinnati 24. Memphis goes 11-1. Cincy goes 10-2. And guess what? They play again next week in your American championship game.
Yes, my very specific one. UCF ran the ball really well. That's how they just got on over South Florida. Yeah, you're right about Memphis in the rematch. That was largely because of, actually, it was a pretty complete game for Memphis on both sides of the ball. But Brady White had a nice game like he generally does. It was really DeMonte Coxey, who is just unguardable, it seemed, a big play guy for Memphis. And since he goes with Ben Bryant at quarterback, and Mikey Warren is good on the ground, but Cincinnati's offense still is pretty rough. We'll see if they can, you know, make any adjustments, any tweaks. In the title game, Navy, who had a shot at going to the title game with a Memphis loss, they score 56 on Houston on the road. I know it's not the same Houston team we were expecting to start the season, but still, for Navy to come back, and I think they're now 9-2 ahead of the Army game, to win 10-plus in a bounce-back year, I think it's pretty impressive. Temple went down early to UConn, and then they went up, and then they stayed up. And that was just sort of that for that game. So a nice first year for Rod Carey and Temple as they try to get back to where Temple has been in previous years. Boise State, and I think this was Friday night, played Colorado State in Fort Collins at altitude, Ty. At altitude, I looked this up, about 5,000 feet, Fort Collins.
Okay.
But Boise State, a nice day, sort of getting it done as a complete team. It was another game that was too close at times, and Jalen Henderson is okay. A lot of sort of shovel passes. I watched this game after the fact, but I thought Colorado State did a nice job against George Helani, who had been gashing teams. It was mostly the Boise State defense that came up big when they needed to. Elsewhere in the Mountain West, Air Force finishes out their 10-win campaign pretty quietly, but they beat Wyoming, and good for Air Force. Nice year for both Air Force and Navy in bounce-back years. Utah State gets over on New Mexico. Bob Davey will not be back at New Mexico. In just finishing the weird year for Nevada, where they might have gone 8-4 while also getting murdered by all sorts of teams, UNLV, without their head coach, who they fired already, beats Nevada in overtime. San Diego State over BYU. I did see a stat that San Diego State was hitting the game under. So if you're betting a game over under,
right?
San Diego State games hit the under like 93% of the time. So hopefully somebody out there in like Escondido or El Cajon is getting very wealthy betting the unders on San Diego State football. San Jose State pulls out and finishes, 5-7 over Fresno State. Hawaii, who is playing Boise in the Mountain West Championship game, they take down Army, who traveled 400 gajillion miles to get to Honolulu by 21 points. We've set up the MAC Championship game. It's Central Michigan, who was truly terrible last year. And then they hired Jim McElwain. They beat Toledo. Excuse me. They stomp Toledo.
Killed them. Yeah.
And make it to face Miami of Ohio, who lost, but they face, I think it's at Ford Field, Ty.
Yep, MAC Ford Championship Field. Game. Always a Ford Field. Yeah.
Always Ford Field. In the Sun Belts, App State is taking on, I believe, is it Louisiana?
Louisiana. Yes. Yeah. Louisiana, nice year. Yeah.
Louisiana, very nice year. Billy Napier. Georgia Southern beats Georgia State in their rivalry game. App State just demolishes Troy, and they did a really good job against what I thought was a pretty good Troy offense. It was Zach Thomas to, I believe, Thomas Hennigan finding, and here is your strained pun of the day, all of the nooks and crannies in the Troy defense, the Thomas's tie.
Okay, that was very strained.
Who is in the Conference USA title game? I believe
it is
it's FAU
and UAB, the battle of the acronyms,
right,
in the Conference USA championship. And then in the Power Five, we've tried to set this up as we went along here, but Pac-12, it's Utah against your Oregon Ducks, defending Red Box Bowl champions.
Friday night, yeah.
Big 12, we've got Oklahoma.
Returning to the site, Ty.
Returning to the scene of the crime, yes.
Yeah.
We've got Oklahoma-Baylor in the Big 12 game, rematch from a previous matchup. In the ACC, we've got Clemson against Virginia. In the SEC, we've got LSU-Georgia. And in the Big 10, we've got Ohio State against Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean, all around, should be pretty good championship weekend.
I'm excited. I'm also excited for the Dr. Pepper tuition throw. We've got multiple tuition throws coming our way this
coming
weekend.
Stand in 2019? Chess pass acceptable?
No.
Or you
no,
have
I'm still
to be
out.
A man or
no,
an
you
adult?
Still got to throw it. I don't care if you, you throw it underhand. Overhand. You got to throw it overhand. Overhand or underhand.
But not chest.
Not chest, no.
Oh, I say do what it takes for that sweet, sweet cash, Ty.
I'm not
Stop
a fan.
Thinking about impressing people.
I'm not a fan.
This is your don't look now finishing regular season. Navy, I guess their regular season isn't finished, but they could go 10-2, which is great. And in the ACC, Virginia obviously takes their division. But hey, Pitt, 7-5. I thought they might go 4-8. That's better than 4-8. So you proved me wrong. Louisville yep. with a nice bounce back year going 7-5, even though they got murdered by Kentucky. In the Big 12, obviously, Baylor is the big story in terms of surprises. And TCU, I know that you're broken up, Ty. I know that this was enough
to
help you
to
see
me.
Other teams.
Dead to me.
Indiana and Minnesota are still the stories to me in the Big Ten in terms of jumping up and becoming impressive, even though I thoroughly enjoyed some Illinois moments all season long. Louisiana Tech, when they had Jamar Smith, they went 9-1. That's a pretty good record. They finished the year 9-3 under your guy and future Notre Dame head coach, Skip Holtz.
Stop it.
Miami of Ohio is playing Central Michigan. We mentioned that. In the Mountain West, we mentioned Air Force. San Diego State, a very quiet 9-3. And just shut down everybody. In the Pac-12, Oregon State jumped up nicely. Obviously, Utah stays great. UCLA, they were at least feisty and entertaining at times. Yes?
Yeah, at times.
Yeah. And in the SEC, Tennessee, they complete the tennissance. Right? I okay. called this, Ty. Let me
you
have
tried.
My
you
wins.
Really tried. You really tried.
Tennessee finishes out the season winning 5 in a row, Ty.
Not bad.
Raise your hand if you have that.
No, not bad.
Raise your hand if you have that, because I am raising my hand in the Clawfus. And in the Sun Belt, just a really cool year for Eli Drinkwitz, keeping App State on top as they head into the conference championship game. And that, aside from Holy Cross going down to Monmouth in the opening round of the SCS playoffs, is all I have to discuss. And now I want to just mention some dudes.
All right, who do we got here? Who do we got?
Lynn Bowden, obviously. Bryce Perkins, Keith Duncan, and AJ Epenesa, double Iowa dudage. Parnell Motley, I mentioned for Oklahoma. Quintez Cephas getting it done for Wisconsin. Trevor Lawrence, he's probably retired, but he was, again, perfect. Eric Gray, the Gray area.
Big play, guy. Eric Gray, baby.
Big play, Eric Gray. Sam Howell was terrific for North Carolina. And you know what? Shout out Jamel Carruthers, the fullback for Navy, who was not even on the team to start the year. He was on the JV scout team type thing. And then they said, oh, he should be playing.
Hell yeah.
And he just ran for a bajillion yards
Hell
yesterday.
Yeah.
So nice story. And those are your dudes.
Those are your dudes. So a little bit of a longer show here.
It's rivalry week.
It's rivalry week. You got to throw out the records, we said. And you got to talk through all these games. We also have far-reaching implications now as we head into the postseason. Not yeah. only in the way of coaching announcements and retentions and firings, that sort of thing, guys moving right. around, but also bowl announcements are going to be coming up pretty shortly. Playoff announcements, we'll find out, of course, after conference championship week. So a lot to get through here as the season wanes and we get towards the end of it, but please do stay tuned to the Solid Verbal. Don't forget to subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts. You can find the show. We appreciate all of your ratings and reviews.
That'd be great.
There will be a bowl pick'em challenge, a confidence pool, which we always have a good time deciphering and trying to find the proper strategy to help you win, which we'll talk through, of course, as soon as the bowls become public. But mm-hmm. we are hard at work scheduling that out. So stay tuned as we get into the month of December here. As you know, Dan, I don't have the sound on hand, but it will be a December to remember. Or maybe I do.
Take that, Happy Honda Days.
That's right.
Take that. There it is.
So stay tuned to the show.
Yeah. Oh, I'm excited for this week's Twos Cruise. We're going to have some fire.
We are going to have some fire. Only a couple Twos Cruises left.
Yeah.
So make sure you cherish each and every one of them. Twos Cruise coming your way on Tuesday morning. We will be previewing all the college football championship games this coming week on our Thursday preview show. And of course, recapping a remarkable season, a fun season.
Yes.
Next Sunday.
100%.
That's all I got, Dan.
All right. Same.
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein. For myself, Ty Hildebrand. Hope you enjoyed your rivalry week. We will be back on Tuesday. Set sail on the Tooth Cruise once more. For that guy over there, Dan Rubenstein, myself, Ty Hildebrand. Enjoy your Sunday. Stay solid.
Peace.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.